Welcome to you all today, January 12th, 2019, to our new series, 41, entitled Seven Trumpets. Our first study is entitled Escape from the Pit. Let us turn to Revelation chapter 9. In our Davidian Adventist experience, we've covered a lot of this material. Now we are anxious to deepen its impact and its meaning. Verse 1, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit." Verse 3. "And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power." Let us continue to verse 5. "And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man." This fifth trumpet seems to be quite the menacing and foreboding prophetic revelation. It's not one of those themes that when you look at it ostensibly and superficially, you joy and say, "Well, I can't wait till that happens." But I want you to understand what we've learned about Revelation. It's a book of symbolism. And therefore, by use of symbolism, it could convey, as well as it oftentimes does convey, a meaning that is diversionary from your presumptions. That is the fifth trumpet. Why start with the fifth? First, let us give a little bit of background about the trumpets. We need to understand one key component that has never been emphasized to us before. And that is that the seven trumpets are blasted after the seventh seal. Hence the commission could be stated, "Hurt not them that have the seal of God." There's only seven seals. And since men have been hurt by the gospel heretofore, we know that we have never received the seventh seal. But when it comes, the people who have received it are given a commission not to hurt those that have the seal of God, which indicates that they have license to hurt whomever they so desire, whatever that term hurt pervades to us. Let us read Revelation chapter 8. "And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets." Verse 7. "And the first angel sounded. He did what? The first angel sounded. When did he sound? After the seventh seal was open. In fact, he sounded, I believe, during the space of the half hour silence. "The first angel sounded, and there followed hell and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up." Automatically, you know that that is a purveyance that requires interpretation. You wouldn't expect that the fire would only burn up the green grass. It's our mission to unfold the deeper meaning of this study. but it's not something that we can capture in one sitting. Let me just state that this theme is deep and requires much mastication because it occurs after the half-hour silence of the seventh seal. We have already studied the theology surrounding the half-hour silence. In a nutshell, it comes when the praises to God for all His adjudications is halted in heaven, a judicial scene. It is further defined as unknown. What did I say? It is unknown. It is the unknown hour when the thief comes to break up the good man's house. Let us read a little bit about that aspect of the half-hour silence. Matthew chapter 24, verse 42 through 45. Watch therefore, for ye know not. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. This is Christ speaking. He says, you need education. I have hidden from your eyes this unknown quality, the day when your Lord doth come. I could have said, for ye know not the day that I shall return. That's not the expression that I used. I said the day when your Lord doth come. He's a separate and distinct person from Jesus and Christ. And by virtue of the fact that I have to say it, manifest the truthfulness of the statement. Because he says, ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Well, we've been studying for 150 years from E.G. White, V.T. Otis' work, and we know that Jesus is going to return. You think you know, but you don't know the hour that your Lord doth come. I will show you that this Lord is a separate and distinct personality that goes contrary to human thinking, and he emerges in an hour. I reiterate at the point of sounding redundant, watch ye therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Ah, so your Lord now is somebody that's defined as a thief. And beyond that, there's a good man of the house. So he has to be the good man of the Lord's church, of the Seventh-day Adventist church, of Laodicea. There's a lot of men in the Seventh-day Adventist church, but there's only one good man. And that good man was ignorant of the time when the thief would come, because the thief was his Lord also. That good man was V.T. Hotef. The Lord did not want him to know the specifics of the half-hour silence, or in fact, of the revelation of the seventh seal, because he didn't want him to preclude the breakup of the house. That thief represents antitypical Jacob. That's why Jacob was called the supplanter. This points to the day when he is no longer stealing to make a living. He's no longer deceiving. He doesn't have to trick Esau out of his inheritance. He doesn't have to steal from Laban his cattle through his machinations and chicanery. This is the day when he gains victory. And that victory is the day when his name is changed. Thus we are told in Genesis chapter 32, quote, and he said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. This is Jacob talking to the Lord. Verse 27, and he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. Therefore, the day of his prevail pointed Jacob 3,700 years down the road when his posterity would gain victory and have his name changed. That's the day when he'll be called Israel. Continuing the reading. And Jacob asked him and said, Tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there.
Close quote.
Showing you that he, the Lord, did not want the literal Jacob to be the one that reveals Christ's identity. You got no business asking after my name. You got a kingdom to give to me. You see, you got a crown, you got everlasting life that I could benefit from. Wherefore do you ask? That occurred some 20 years after what we're going to read in Genesis chapter 28. All while we're seeking to understand the fifth trumpet. Verse 16, And Jacob awakened out of his sleep, and he said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. It takes a certain amount of discernment and skill. It's not a natural instinct. You can't smell the Lord. You can't see the Lord. You can't hear Him. Jacob, through his dream, recognized the Lord was in that place, and he couldn't discern it. Why? Because he didn't know the name of the Lord. He didn't know the identity of the Lord. Verse 19, And he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz. At the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, If God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. It's important that we understand the message that Jacob symbolized the house with his pillar stone. He knew that it was symbolic because he looked forward to the day of God's final deliverance. So this stone shall be God's house. Evidently, therefore, when the good man of Matthew 24 had hidden from his eyes, and oftentimes you could be righteous, you could be stellar, you could be a pinnacle of a celestial honor, you could be the good man of the house, but yet the Lord keeps light and truth away from you. But now we know that it was the Lord's purpose that Jacob, the thief, returned to the house. And that Vetihatev not know the day or the hour. Because when Jacob returns, he returns with bread. He returns with theology. He returns with that proverbial pitcher of water. And he enlightens the brethren in the house. And what that does is that separates the brethren. It breaks them up. And therefore, protective of Vetihatev's serious efforts to evangelize the church, he did not reveal to them that the hour would come when the Son of David would emerge and that that would cause a cataclysmic breach in the house. You may not be able to see the breach. You may think I'm over-dramatizing it. But the breach extends beyond those who are alive, and it extends to those that are going to be called forward in the resurrection as well. That breach isolates people eternally, or seals people eternally from God's protectorate. And that's why we have the trumpets blasting in the seventh seal. We can't really attach any light or truth to the seventh seal and the seven trumpets unless we attribute it to the coming thief, for lack of a better word. Reverting back to Matthew 24:43. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known and what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour, for in such an hour, see, this is an anticipation of an hour. For in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. Who is he? It's a good question. The Lord said, who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Inevitably then, this servant is blessed. He has to be the thief that the good man did not anticipate. He's a faithful and wise servant, and he makes him ruler over his household. Why? To give them meat in due season. So now some of you have already seen the connection to this text in the seventh seal. If not, let us meander to another text. Christ abode upon Jesus, as we'll see later on in this study, and led him to the other side of the Sea of Tiberias. And there he fed them bread and fish, and it satisfied the hungry throngs. He fed 5,000 men, it says. And then there was enough, miraculously, from the 5 loaves and 2 fish for the disciples to gather them up, that nothing be lost. Which means that the Lord place great value on that bread that was distributed. And we know that bread represents theology. That's why Jacob comes with his own bread. But counterintuitive to our thinking, the Lord did not make any use of the bread that the disciples gathered. Instead, when they journeyed to the other side of the Sea of Tiberias, he gave us insight into the seal that we need to seek after so that we could be participants in the good man's house. And as a result, so that we can be rewarded in the day of the fifth trumpet. He told them in John chapter 6, verse 26, picking up on the excursion of the Sea of Tiberias. You know, there were other boats that followed the Lord. They finally located them on the other side. Jesus had disembarked from the old ship of Zion and began his ministry again. He said, verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed.
Sealed.
For him hath God the Father sealed. Your commission is to do what we're told in Matthew chapter 24. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Therefore, Christ told them that they need to labor for the meat that somebody else was to give to them. The Son of Man. How does he become the Son of Man? Because he does the will of the Father. The Lord in Matthew chapter 12 says, quote, for whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother, my sister, and my mother. Close quote. To be a brother or sister to Christ makes you a son of the highest, of the Father. And therefore the Lord says, look to the Son of Man. Labor for the bread which he shall give you. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life. That's a very key component. Which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed.
Sealed.
For him hath God the Father sealed. Therefore, if you consume his bread, you have consumed bread that worketh unto everlasting life. I'm connecting some dots here, because the study can be quite deep and profound, and I want you to be able to see these connections. Thus, aha, we found him. We could dismiss the rudimentary and the principal teachings of Jesus Christ as they pervade for these last 2,000 years. Now we've got Jacob, who's overcome, who's learned how to do the will of the Father. He's come to break up the house, but we're not going to be broken up on the wrong side of the house because we watched for Him. And we've received Him. Because we know that God the Father sealed Him. Do you know anybody heretofore that has received everlasting life? That's been around for 5,000 years, 2,000 years? Why not? Because the seventh seal is the last seal to be opened. It has to be the one that's endowed to this Son of Man. Because it gives to you everlasting life. And everlasting life is the purpose for our theological struggles. It's the reason for our admittance and our adherence to the good man's house. We want to be participants in the kingdom of God, the kingdom that lasts forever. Therefore, everlasting life is the appeal for all of humanity, not for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Jesus spoke of the everlasting life after He disembarked from the ship that contained the disciples. And we see in the fifth trumpet that you're commanded not to hurt those that have the seal of God. That's part of your commission. Revelation chapter 4, verse 8 through 11, helps us to advance this study. Quote, "And the four beasts had each of them six wings about him, and they were full of eyes within, and they rested not day and night, saying, Holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come. And when those beasts give glory and honor and thanks to Him that sat on the throne, who liveth forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before Him that sat on the throne and worship Him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created." Interrupting the quote. The reason why I'm reading these texts is because we're talking about the half-hour silence. We see that the fifth trumpet is open after the half-hour silence. So now we need to understand what the noise that's going on pertains to. A little bit more of that noise. Continuing the reading. Chapter 5, verse 9 through 13. "And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book, and to open the seals thereof. For Thou wast slain, and Thou hast redeemed us to God by Thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nations." So we see here glory to the Father, glory to Christ, whom the Father deployed to create, and now glory to Jesus. There's a whole lot of noise going on. Continuing the reading. "And has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. And I beheld, and I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne, and the beast, and the elders. And the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth and such as are in the sea and all that are in them heard I saying, Blessing and honor and glory and power be unto Him that sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb forever and ever." Close quote. So they're pronouncing praise and honor and glory to the Father, to Christ, and to Jesus. Why should they stop? What is it that is compelling them to cease so that now there's silence in heaven after the opening of the seventh seal? This is the judicial proceedings. And they're seeing that Jesus died to redeem them. Therefore, Jesus is worthy to open the seven seals. And when He opens the seven seals, we're not talking about the trumpets, get it? When He opens the seven seals, He reveals those who've been attached to righteousness and that are adjudicated in the judgment from the beginning of time. And they're making an announcement that the Father's judgments are just and righteous. These beasts and these elders represent those we have shown in past studies that have been taken up to heaven without seeing death. John chapter 17 says they were taken to see Christ's glory. And as a result, this is what they see. We refer to them as the Enochians. You know, Jude refers to them as the Lord returning with 10,000s, a plurality of 10,000 of saints. What are they to do? Jude verse 14. In Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment, to execute judgment upon all, and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches, which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. Now we can understand with the opening of the fifth trumpet and with the opening of the seventh seal as well, that these people that were in heaven, defined as beasts, are now convinced of Father's righteousness and of his judgment, and they themselves are coming to execute judgment. We could tie back to that tangential appendage of the study as we advance. But the reason why we have a half an hour silence is because the judgment scene comes to earth. Where is it? I haven't heard it on MSNBC. Haven't heard about it on NBC or, you know, the news reports haven't announced it. Well, just like Jacob, when he said, quote, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. These people have returned, and before they begin their work, there's no indication that you will be able, with your senses, to discern their arrival. The only way you're going to discern their arrival, here we go, with the trumpets. When the Son of Man lifts up his voice like a trumpet, the noisemakers were sent to earth. As a summation, before we continue, we can link this series with our prior series through this trumpeted message. Our prior series was entitled Elected Witnesses. And we are the ones that have been elected to trumpet Christ's righteousness to the mountains. I mean, it was good to trumpet it to the angels up in heaven, but nobody, wherever that judgment scene took place, nobody was able to hear and receive it. The Father says, I'm pleased. Christ says, that's great. Jesus says, well done. You've recognized my righteousness. Now it's time to go tell it on the mountains, over the hills and everywhere. I'm going to leave that commission up to my servant, Jacob. He's the one that's commissioned to blast the trumpet. This occurs during the final 42 months. That's why Isaiah 58, but it tells you, verse 1, Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgressions, and the house of Jacob their sins. These are people that have occupied the house. This has been the mustard seed's commission these past years, to show them that there's been a transition in the government. They've ignored Christ. He commissions them to offer a new sacrifice, something that we won't get into today. But the most important point is that Jacob has to lift up his voice like a trumpet for the purpose of showing the house of Jacob his sins. Consequently, he must be the one who has been enlightened to define their sins. And their reaction to his commission measures their standing in the judgment. I know it seems like, based upon the numbers and our ability to analyze them, very few are going to be saved. But this trumpet will have to be declared in the special resurrection. All those who died in the three angels' message, who've been asleep, are going to have an opportunity when Jacob blasts his trumpet to receive his light and his truth, and therefore to receive everlasting life. Should they comply with the Lord's commission given to us in John chapter 6, and seek not after the bread that perisheth, but after the bread which worketh unto everlasting life. One question, though, that has to be resolved, that will allow for us to understand the seven trumpets, is how could the fifth trumpet commence with Calvary if it is only blasted today? The fifth trumpet, as well as all the other trumpets, cover a period of time in church history. The truth that pertained and the full light that pertained to those times, we don't know. Just like the elders and the four beasts in heaven, they didn't know. They were trembling because no man was worthy to open the book of the seven seals until it was told to John, "Weep not." John was weeping because he thought that opportunity for salvation was lost. We didn't read that in this study. We've read it before. He was told to weep not because the Lamb that was slain has proven to be worthy to take the book out of the Father's hands and to open it. Consequently, we have special meaning to the Lord's pronouncement in Matthew chapter 11, verse 25 and 26. "I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for it seemed good in thy sight." The opening of the seven seals is the revelation of the gospel message. And the blasting of the seven trumpets shows you the penalty that is exacted upon those who refuse to respond to the trumpeted message. We should understand now why it commenced at Calvary. Because at Calvary, the people that fell under the commission of the church beforehand were the people of the fourth trumpet. The fourth trumpet takes the church back to the Babylonian dispersion, whereby the Jews that were dispersed fell under that purveyance, that trumpet. The disciples who advanced the cause of Christianity, which is exhibited by the smoke that ascended out of the pit, which is exemplary of the sacrifice that Jesus made, they are the ones that trumpet the gospel of freedom. "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit." Brother Hatta correctly convinces us that this represents the sanctuary smoke that descended before the throne with the sacrifice of Jesus at Calvary. "As the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit." What point can we garner? Those who embrace Christianity, as well as those who trumpeted Christianity, were the purveyors of the covenant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were the ones that had relayed to them the keys to the kingdom. They are the ones that, by the embrace of the Christian gospel, no matter how tepid it was at first, no matter how elementary it was at first, they had the keys to freedom. Freedom only comes by continuing in the Lord's word. That's why we're told in John chapter 8, "Then said the Lord unto those Jews which believe on him, if ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The Caiaphasian Jews, the scribes and Pharisees, were not empowered to extend freedom to the world. The world will only receive freedom by continuing in the Lord's word, by advancing as we gain knowledge of it as it is unfolded to us. This is one of the reasons why it's dastardly and it's heinous for anyone to suggest that you become a Mason and that you journey back to Egypt. Egypt represents the church devoid of Christ. Because what you're doing is you're compelling men to lose their salvation. You're locking them back under the gates of the bottomless pit. You're removing from them the blessing of the keys that has been invested in the disciples. No, the purveyors of the fourth trumpet, the third trumpet, the second trumpet, and the first trumpet did not have the power to win for humanity freedom from the bottomless pit. The bottomless pit symbolizes eternal downfall. The trumpet reflects back on sin. Remember I quoted to you Isaiah 58, lift up thy voice like a trumpet and show the house of Jacob their sins. They didn't know their sins. It's a purveyor of righteousness that is supposed to reveal to the world sin and righteousness. John chapter 16, verse 7. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you. And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. Of sin because they believe not on me. Therefore, this coming of the Comforter refers to a day when the name of the Lord is revealed. And the Comforter is showing this is not the person or the personality that you've inculcated in your prayers. You didn't believe on him of righteousness because I go to my Father and ye see me no more. Christ's journey to the Father, the fact that you see him no more, indicates that he will invisibly return to preside on the Son of David by the Father's express commission of judgment because the prince of this world is judged. So this is a day that identifies the downfall of Satan. This is the day that identifies and exposes his falsehood and his lies to the point whereby it's so acute and it's the doctrine is so tight that none can squirm out of it. Yet and still, it's still remarkable. We're studying about the fifth trumpet and we're making applicable the events that occur at the end. So you would think that if the fifth trumpet identifies the house of David, then what should the sixth and the seventh trumpet identify? A good question, right? The fifth trumpet shows you the victors of Christianity. Those who have traversed over that symbolic sea of Tiberias and who have cast aside the meat that perisheth, and who have finally embraced the meat which the Son of Man giveth, which worketh unto everlasting life. It's intricately connected to the sixth and seventh trumpet, except for the fact that the sixth and seventh trumpet is isolated to the Seventh Adventist Church, a segmentation of the Gentile Christian gospel. Let us read Revelation chapter 8, verse 12. Quote, and the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. We could explain and explore that Bible prophecy in another study. That's the fourth trumpet, right? But then verse 13, by pointing to the fifth trumpet, says, and I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound. Therefore, this angel is connecting the fifth trumpet with the sixth trumpet and the seventh trumpet. And he's telling you that the penalties are not exacted until you hear the revelations of the sixth and the seventh trumpet. After the fourth comes the fifth. We were studying the fifth in chapter 9. Therefore, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh are bundled under three woes. A woe is a lookout. A woe is an admonition to be careful and to be studious, to watch. That's what a woe is telling you. Therefore, if you're watching righteously for salvation, you're not going to reveal that until the sixth or seventh trumpets are sounded, but the salvation is depicted in the fifth trumpet. If you're going to be damned or punished, why doesn't the Lord send down a bolt of lightning and strike my enemies? The woe for their punishment has not come to fruition. That's why I focused this first study on the expanse of the fifth trumpet. We know that the star came down from heaven. Brother Hatif says that represents Jesus. This is why we have to pronounce the woe under the auspices of the fifth trumpet. Because Brother Hatif did not have an opportunity to discern the difference between Jesus and Christ. This is why the Comforter is going to convict the world of sin. What did he say? Of sin, because they believe not on me. If you don't believe that Christ is the star, and that he's a separate and distinct person that descended from heaven and rested on Jesus, then that's a sin that the Comforter has to convict you of so that you can overcome. But you said Brother Hatif was a good man. He was a good man because the light of the gospel had not been unfolded yet. But the day is going to come when he comes forward in the special direction that he will be able to manifest his goodness by the embrace of the fullness of Christ. And that's why Jesus told his disciples, quote, "Then said Jesus unto those Jews which believe on him, if ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
Close quote.
That opening of the bottomless pit by the key represents humanity's freedom. It's not only extended to the church, but there's a day of freedom that is extended to the entirety of the world, and it comes by knowing the fullness of the doctrine of Christ. Just as Paul admonished, and just as the Lord also admonished, because he promised to raise it up again in the last day. Let us integrate Ephesians chapter 4 into this study. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, till we all come into unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man. Has to be the Son of Man. And to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. That we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. He likewise told us, John chapter 14, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." You don't have access to God the Father unless you embrace Christ. And the thing that you need to know about Christ is that he was in heaven and that he descended from heaven and rested upon Jesus. That we see this in John chapter 1. In the beginning, verse 1, was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Verses 10 through 12. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. How in the world could he be in the world and the world not know him? Because he was hidden on Jesus. As it explains, continuing the reading. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. That goes to show you that the power comes not with the fourth trumpet, but with the fifth trumpet. That's when you were given power. Though your education may have been aborted, you're going to pick it up again. And that's the marvel of the fifth trumpet. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So John the Baptist is telling you that you didn't see the Word, you saw the Word through Jesus. He continues forward in John chapter 1, verses 31 through 33. And I knew him not, but that he should be made manifest to Israel. Therefore I am come, baptizing with water. And John bare record, saying, I saw the Spirit descending from heaven like a dove, and it abode upon him. and I knew him not. But he that sent me to baptize with water, the same said unto me, upon whom thou shalt see the Spirit descending and remaining on him, the same is he which baptizeth with the Holy Ghost. He's not the Holy Ghost. He baptizes with the Holy Ghost. We thought it was the Holy Ghost, the third person of God, that descended upon Jesus. But John the Baptist is telling you that this Spirit descended from heaven and rested and abode upon Jesus. That Spirit was Christ. He is the lesson that even Davidians need to discern. Though they may be masters of the seven trumpets, they need to discern that it was Christ, it was not Jesus, who orchestrated the testimony, the 3.5 years of Jesus' ministry. He spoke through Jesus' lips and through his mouth. He's the one he was given the keys. You would think that if he was God, he would have the keys, right? No. It says he was given the keys. Let's read that. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Christ is separate and distinct from the Father. This is our righteousness. Understanding this doctrine is our salvation. He did not have the keys. He was given the keys. And all those who receive entry into the freedom by which he afforded. They receive entry into the kingdom. It's important to understand because Peter was promised to get the keys. Matthew chapter 16, verse 16. And Simon Peter answered and said, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Oh, that won for him celebration. And Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock will I build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So upon the rock that Jesus was the Christ, that Christ descended and rested and abode upon Jesus and spoke through him. Jesus was not Christ. He was the Christ, the one that Moses promised that Christ would channel his light and doctrine through that prophet. That's the doctrine upon which he's going to build his church. And the gates of hell are not going to prevail against it. You can't understand these things unless you understand the fifth trumpet. And I have given unto thee. Is that what it says? No. He promises in the future to give unto Peter. And I will give unto thee. Now you have to understand that he's speaking proverbially. All that he taught is in proverb. So he's using Peter as an icon of the thief. The faithful servant who feeds meat in due season. Because he says that faithful wise servant, he's going to make him ruler over all that he hath. Therefore, if he gives the keys to Peter, he's manifesting that the keys are not in the hands of the Old Testament church. The keys are not in the hands of the scribes and Pharisees. Peter, the promise of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to eternally bless the nations, that key I'm placing in the Christian church epic. Continuing the reading. I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. If he meant it any other way, then he couldn't say the gates of hell shall not prevail against thee. Because Peter was crucified. He died unequivocally and devoid of any further doubt. He's not talking about literal Peter. He's talking about the purveyance of the keys that the star came down to open the bottomless pit to extend to the Gentile world freedom. Chapter 9 of Revelation, verse 12, it tells you, quote, One woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter, close quote. Consequently, they're broadcast another trumpet. They're all banded by the three woes. Therefore, if you want to know salvation or damnation, you got to look to the fifth trumpet the sixth trumpet and the seventh trumpet. And the six angels sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God. We're only going to read that much about the sixth trumpet now, because it shows you the judgment setting, which was vested entirely and exclusively in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So being specially set apart, they have a special trumpeted gospel, which is encompassed by the fifth trumpet, the sixth trumpet, and the seventh trumpet, which is culminated by Jacob blasting his trumpet, as depicted in Isaiah 58. The keys were vested in the hands of Peter. The Lord promised to give him the keys. But the Lord, I reiterate at the point of sounding redundant, the Lord was given the keys by somebody else who had obviously more power than him, by the Father. So now Christ, amidst all of his glory and honor, he's got the earth and the solar system that he's created. He's got the church that he blessed. He's got the promises and the miracles that he made manifest. He's got the graces of God bestowed upon him. He's got the Enochians around his throne to give him glory. But he's got one more thing. He's got the key. Therefore, in Matthew chapter 24, which is the same as Luke chapter 12, he said, "Who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household to give them their portion of meat in due season?" Remember, Jacob's stone emblemized the house of God. Jacob represents the Son of Man, the thief in the night, the faithful and wise steward. The Lord is going to make him ruler over his household. How do you make someone rule over your household? You ever buy a house? Amongst the many things that they give you the key. Nobody else has the key. You're the only one that has access to the house. Why does he make him ruler over his household? "Who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household to give them their portion of meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Of a truth I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all that he hath." Notice there's two aspects to Jacob's emergence. He comes as a thief to the surprise of Davidia. He comes with the truth of the seventh seal. So that's why when the Lord comes, he finds him feeding meat in due season already. But when the Lord comes, he comes at the half-hour silence. And he brings the Enochians with him. That's the blast of the trumpet. "Watch ye therefore, for ye know not which hour your Lord doth come. An hour with two halves, a sealing half, and a loud cry, trumpet blaring half hour. The time when, during the final 42 months, he declares to the nations Christ's favor upon Jerusalem." Let us continue reading about the locusts, backtracking just a little. Revelation chapter 9. "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power." Let us see if we can garner an image of what's going on here. Because these are people that are empowered, yet they're depicted as a locust. Locusts are animal creatures. They're not human creatures. Which goes to show you that at the beginning of the Gentile ministry, God freed humans that had no appreciation for his righteousness and for his word. 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. And now the days of David drew nigh, that he should die, and he charged Solomon, his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. He could have asked him to show himself a horse, or a lion, or a locust. He's being metaphoric, because Solomon was already a man. So he's defining for you the Bible definition of a man. To keep the charge of the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his statutes, and his commandments, and his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest, and whithersoever thou turnest thyself. Manifestly, therefore, the Lord did not yet give these locusts the image of manhood. That's why it doesn't say, and men fled from the bottomless pit. It says locusts were empowered. These locusts, in this aspect, represent the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who freed themselves through Calvary by the embrace of the message and began to have power over the earth. You talk about the tragedies of the Vietnam War, whereby they killed, tell me, a million people. You talk about the wars with Saddam Hussein in Iraq. You talk about the American Indian Wars. You talk about the excesses of slavery. All these came because the locusts were given power. In fact, I reflect back on an American Indian experience whereby they became dreadful, even though on occasion they defeated many of the white soldiers. They were frustrated because they just kept coming and coming and coming. That's what locusts do. They had no idea that the people that were fighting numbered in the millions back east. And what they did is they swarmed the land. They killed nearly all of the buffalo. They exploited the earth. They exploited the natural resources. In fact, now they're talking about preserving the wildlife in Africa. They're the ones that went down and killed it all. These were locusts that
must be defined as those who
did not have the heart of men. Yet they were empowered. It's a dangerous thing to just put anybody in power. The Lord put them in power because he wanted them to punish his enemies. That's why the locusts were given power. Nobody else who had not escaped from the bottomless pit, nobody else who had not accepted Christianity was able to prevail. And that worked to the benefit of the world. Adolf Hitler and the Japanese Empire sought to reinstall the occult as the religion of the planet. You read carefully, you'll see this. But then the Assyrian went and swarmed on him and destroyed them because the Lord vested in the Assyrian power. It's a good thing to be connected with God, even as a locust, if you got power, then I guess I should say. Because I remember during the slavery epic, we were crying out because of our oppression and our affliction. And half of the Assyrian, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, rose up and attacked the other half to win for us freedom. The Lord knows what he's doing. He's vested in power, but the time is going to come when he is going to graduate him. That's why you've got to see the entirety of the picture from Calvary to now. He's going to graduate him into wisdom. Continue to read. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which had not the seal of God in their forehead. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. So now he's got power in his tail. This points to the day when the Enochians are going to come and unite with this work, and they are the ones that are going to be executing judgment. They represent the proverbial scorpion's tail. But this scorpion morphs into a creature that is almost impossible for us to fathom. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. See, this is not the day when the bottomless pit was open. The locusts have already escaped, and you're getting a graduation of time. This is a time when people boldly denounce Satan, knowing that there's a penalty of death, and death flees from them. That day is only now here upon us. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. I'm interrupting the quote. Now, how in the world could that be? How could you be a locust and look like a horse? Horses symbolize our dominion over the planet. We ride the earth. We control it. Evidently, the day is going to come when the righteous who have accepted Christianity, who have embraced the keys that the Lord promised to give to the tail end of the Christians, those who embrace the gospel, they are going to appear now, not as locusts, but as horses, unto battle.
The quote continues.
And on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. So this is the day when we become coronated. See, the Abrahamic promise comes to fruition in the Gentile epoch. That's what the fifth trumpet is showing you. That's the day when Christians become coronated. That's the day when we receive preeminence over the Lord's kingdom. 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 11. And since the time that I commanded judges to be over my people Israel, and have caused thee to rest from all thine enemies, also the Lord telleth thee that he will make thee an house. So this is the house of God. He makes it for David. And when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. This is the coronation of the locust horse. He shall build a house for my name. For my name.
For my name. For my name.
That's why he's riding the horse. He's going about seeking to evangelize the earth. He shall build a house for my name. He knows the name of the Lord. He knows that it was Christ that descended from heaven as the star and rested in a boat upon Jesus. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. So if he establishes the throne of his kingdom forever, then who is it that receives the golden crown? It's the Son of David. And it's those who unite under the Davidic kingdom. It's the Seventh-day Adventist world who responds favorably to the other two woes that are going to step forward and receive their empowerment.
Let us go back to Revelation chapter 9, verse 7.
The quote continues, and the shape of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were as it were crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men.
Of men, men, men.
And their faces were as the faces of men. Did you get that? Does that need special emphasis? Why in the world would the Lord call them locusts if they don't look like locusts? I told you, he's being proverbial. You need some aspects of the locust to show the beginnings of empowerment of the Christian age. But then you morph. You get a scorpion's tail. People that are able to hurt men who have violated the law and who have spoke blasphemy against the Lord. And they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions. Now, I guarantee you this looks nothing like any locust you've ever seen. What do they have? They have hair as the hair of women, and their teeth as the teeth of lions. What are the teeth of lions like? They lock down a doctrine and it can't escape. See, the devil's purveyances that he flooded the world with, his lies, are going to be dashed by these morphed and advanced locusts that are coronated by the Lord, the faithful and wise steward that are made ruler over his house. So much that all their falsities and all their doctrines will make them laughable. They can't go to their secret lodges. They can't go to their ministers. They can't go to anybody whom they ascribe theological wisdom and escape the truth that you declare, to escape the teeth of lions. It clamps down on their falsehood as a lion upon its prey.
Not because God wants us to be erudite, elitist, but because he wants the teacher to control the classroom. Here we have an incontrovertible, codified, keystone conclusion to cancel crass claims of carnal creeps who clamorously cry, cult, cult, to critically counter Christ's keys to the kingdom.
And Brother Hotham tells us what the hair of a woman means. It means it's associated with his church. These people are attached to his church. Therefore, he had to crowd all these symbolisms to depict your work and my work in the seventh trumpet. The locusts come out of the smoke. Verse 7. This smoke only comes with the fifth trumpet epic, the Christian era. These locusts are complex in the shape of the horses, their leaders. They are coronated with the face of men. They are gospel intelligent leaders. Leaders, as David defined, should be the successor. Because Solomon, he was ordained to be the successor of his throne. And the throne was promised to his seed. So to inherit his seed, you have to be judiciously adherent to the testimonies of the Lord. This study expressed that Christians will rule the planet as men compliant to the gospel, with power to punish in their scorpion's tail, the Enochians. Calvary began 2,000 years ago, and it launched forward this epic, which is to culminate today during the half-hour silence. The interim was their development as Christian rulers. We've spoken of the injudicious deployment of the locusts. We know that in the time of his judgment, their sins are to be corrected. Their exploits are to be revisited upon them, those who have done evil. That's why there's a second and third woe to follow the first one. But the resolution is, their judgment, whether condemnation or exoneration as true Christians, comes in the seventh seal. That which John feared could not be opened. It comes in the middle of the mustard seed Advent's message, in the middle of Jacob's reach of the V.T. Hotev house. It comes at the last day of the Christian epic. It comes in the half-hour silence when the censers are cast to the earth, according to Revelation chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. Thus are the victors from Calvary's light coronated or given keys to the kingdom, those promised to David and Peter. Thus are they given lion's teeth, or overwhelming theological power, and the scorpion's tail, for the Enochians come to punish the ungodly of every age. And with that, I bring the study to a close.